I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self-Build Magazine. Okay, so David Dobbs, you were our main case study there for the autumn 2020 edition of Self-Build Magazine. So can you start off and tell us about your project? How did it come about? What's the context of your Self-Build? Yeah.
Well, I built a house on our farm. And the project started about 3 to 4 years before completion of the house. And there were planning problems because of Wicklow County Council are notoriously difficult. And what we ended up doing, despite owning land, we bought a little cottage on the side of the farm to guarantee planning permission, because we could replace that cottage with our new house if required. We didn't want to embark on a lengthy planning application and fail. And one of the main reasons we might have failed is because I already own a house in Wicklow, and that's one no-no. You won't get planning for a second house in Wicklow if you already own a house. So we bought that little cottage. It just happened to be on the side of the farm, and it happened to be vacant. And we were very lucky, and they didn't intend to sell it, but we did a bit of a land swap with the people who owned the cottage. They actually lived on the edge of the farm as well. So we acquired the cottage. And then, as I said, our intention was to knock the cottage and replace it with our new house. But we employed a planning consultant, and the planning consultant was really clever. He used to work for Wicklow County Council, Franco Gallicor. I think, unfortunately, he's now retired. But he was a planning consultant, and he thought that it might be possible to retain the cottage and to build beside it. We built it in a way that they appeared to be linked. So it's effectively one dwelling. And we managed to get planning permission on that basis, which was a huge success. So the cottage is a nice addition to our house, our property.
Absolutely. So what was on the wish list then when you went to design the house itself?
Well, initially our wish list evolved during the planning process. So, I mean, our wish list initially was to get a two-story house. But that was turned down during the planning application. And we probably should have known that. But it was no harm to strive for everything we wanted, because we knew we would have gotten knocked back. So that was our initial plan. And then we, during the further information request, we redid the drawings to a bungalow, a single-story dwelling, which is over 300 square meters. So it occupies a large part of the ground. You know, it's a big, big, long house. So I suppose our main requirement was to have a house to fit our family in. And the bungalow in fact, is much better than a two-story because we've got big high, we've got no ceilings, big high spaces. And we wanted to capture the views because we're on a hill. So we've done that very well and get the light in, which we did as well.
So then the in terms of energy efficiency, wasn't that a bit of a driver as well to try to, suppose now in this day and age, you do have to do pretty well on the energy efficiency side of things. But
yeah, so that
you did give that quite a bit of thought, didn't
we
you?
We did. So we really investigated. There's so many different options. You can insulate a house from either side of the blockwork, so inside and outside, or you can insulate it from inside the blockwork. And sometimes people do that and they dry line as well. So we went for what is it called? Can you remember, Astrid?
Yeah. Did you go for the beads inside?
No, it's 150 mil.
Full fill, was it?
Full fill cavity therm or extra therm. That's what it's called. Extra therm insulation. I've forgotten. I wouldn't remember it a year ago, but extra therm. 150 mil full fill cavity, and that meant we didn't have to put insulation on the outside or the inside. So that's a really good product, and we're very happy with that. The house is nice and warm. So that was the first thing we did. You're right, we really focused on insulation and a good BER. So we also put in spray foam insulation because of ease of in the roof space. Mainly due to ease of insulation, but also installation, but also that installation, also that it creates very good air tightness rather than cutting in boards, which is labor intensive and doesn't give that air tightness, and also much easier, much more difficult to install. We also went for very high quality windows, triple glazed, Aluclad, Nordan. We looked at all the main manufacturers, so all the high quality ones, so Carlson, Rationale, another one, very good one, which we really liked. The name will come back to me shortly. But anyway,
Internorm.
Internorm, that's it. We really liked Internorm, but they were just too expensive. But in fact, we're very happy with the Nordan windows, the quality of them, and they've done really, really well so far.
Yeah. So triple glazing throughout. Did you have to claw back on anything? Because it's fairly high spec. You went for.
We didn't claw back. There's a couple of other things. We also went for these very expensive thermal blocks, which is the first layer of block above the slab. And it prevents,
thermal bridging. Yeah,
thermal bridging, and they were very expensive. Maybe a bit over spec. The builder thought they were, and then a lot of insulation in the floor. Again, that was extra therm. So where we cut back is yes, we didn't manage to put in our PV panels, which we had planned to do.
Right. So you went for a heat pump then to tick that box.
Yeah. So we went for a Neeb heat pump. Which is really, really impressive piece of kit. 16 kilowatts. It sits outside. Incredibly efficient. It's been running for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. It's due a service. It hasn't even been serviced. It just runs like clockwork. Underfloor heating heats all the water. We've got a huge water cylinder. And then we got stacks in all the bedroom, all the rooms. So that works really well. It would have been nice to have PV panels to heat the water, but really. I don't believe PV panels are viable with my very, very small amount of knowledge and experience without being able to feed surplus electricity back to the grid. Once you can do that, I think you have a viable source of energy, which is viable in terms of cost of investment. I mean, it just didn't make sense. The payback is too long. We worked it out in the back of a piece of paper and, we just thought, but it wasn't viable, so we didn't do it. It would have been nice, but we didn't. And that's where our main saving was from our initial plans.
Mm. Yeah, well, they're planning to, supposedly, with these climate action plans and whatnot, we should get something next year.
Yeah, well, that would be good. It needs to be done.
Yeah. Did you make provisions to possibly install panels later down the line? Like, have all the...
Yeah, it's wired.
It's wired.
But... Yeah. I really don't think we will.
Mm. Till the payback's good. So what are your bills like in per year? How much do you spend on electricity?
That's a really good running question. The heat pump? I've neglected to even look at our bills.
Right, so it's not a shocker anyway.
No, it's not a shocker. We've got no gas, no oil. It's only electricity. It's not a shocker.
You do have a mechanical ventilation system as well.
Yeah, which is really critical, air. I think, for new houses. I really think that you need that. Mainly because it's so well insulated and so airtight that without that, you've got to open windows or you've got to put in vents in the walls. Now, vents in the walls just don't make sense to me at all. They allow moisture into your house, and they also counteract all the work you've done in terms of air tightness. So for me, the only option really when you for these modern houses, I think. But again, I'm not that experienced, but that's from my research. I'm pretty happy that we put it in.
Yeah. So then in terms of finding a builder and all that, can you walk us through how you went about it? Because your design was done up by an architect, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did it pretty badly, as it turned out. So
the joys.
Yeah, I know. I tried to tick all the boxes in terms of acquiring a builder and therefore assuring that I got a good one, but it didn't quite work out like that. So I had a QS who assisted with the tender, and we went to tender and we drafted a nice document and we issued it to a number of builders. Only three builders came back to us. The builders that were the lowest price were small local builders who had quite a bit of experience, but probably in building smaller houses. We went and looked at a house which was comparable to ours locally, and it looked fab. And the owners were relatively happy. But in hindsight, I'd say the owners were being very, very kind, because the builders unfortunately didn't work out. The quality of their work just wasn't good enough. Less than halfway through the build, there was just mistake after mistake. Now, some people might have tolerated it, but I'm afraid we didn't. And eventually they couldn't deliver the level of standard that we wanted, which I don't believe was particularly high, but they couldn't deliver it. So the site was shut down during the summer months. All the block work was done. Half the roof was up. And then we got a new builder. The new builder worked out really, really well and finished the job nicely.
Mm-hmm.
McCabe, Kieran McCabe is his name.
How did you find the new builder?
Through a friend and an architect who wasn't actually on the job, but they had worked with these guys. They're Dublin builders. They were competitive as well, surprisingly, for Dublin. They did a really good job. Yeah, a good team. I couldn't fault them, really.
Yeah. And so just the QS portion, it's a quantity surveyor. Why did you decide to go with a quantity surveyor just to
Well, I think that the architect,
the approach to the budget.
I think maybe because, look, you know, I did made a lot of mistakes. So, I mean,
who did
really,
the QS or you?
I did. I mean, really, why, you know, you employ an architect and they say they'll do the whole job. But in theory, they say that. But practically, brilliant. The architect that we had was a great designer. But when it came to managing the project, you know, he was busy designing other houses and bigger jobs. And he just didn't give us a level of attention. And we felt that that would be the case from the start. So we got a QS. Look, again, the QS... You know, I'm being very critical of all the team here to a certain extent, but the QS didn't deliver as much as I would have liked either. But its biggest mistake was recommending the initial builder that we went for. So really, we had a fairly dysfunctional team building a house to start with. And when the new contractor came in, that changed it dramatically. So because they knew exactly what they were doing and they really didn't need as much supervision as the previous builder. So, you know, I think... Overall, I think the biggest thing is to acquire a really, really competent contractor. And that's what we failed to do. And as a result, I think the whole team didn't work. So, so I'm being very negative here, but
That's okay. It's to learn from, isn't it? So did you have a contract in place with those two builders, the first and the second?
Yeah, I did. I had a contract in place. So we terminated the contract and then we got a new contract in place. And it worked out really well, as I said. Now, there's quite a few positives from this happening. Firstly, the contractor left after all the block work was done, and the block work was done over a very wet winter. So then we had a really hot summer and it was very dry. It actually dried out the block work, which is probably required, and all the insulation inside. So, you know, that break was possibly a good thing, even though it didn't feel like it at the time. And we managed to get more time to tweak what we wanted. So, you know, it was a very painful, slow process. It took another 6 months than it should have done, but got a big better product out of, better house out of it at the end, you know. So my point is, if you're not happy, you've got to put the brakes on. You can't, you know, it's more important than being able to get a month ahead. You've got to get the quality that you need.
So that's an important point, because you can get a bit bullied into the builder saying, well, this is the way it's done, and, you know, or try to find shortcuts and things like that. So it is about having the confidence to realize, well, this isn't going to plan, so we have to find a solution here, which could mean
exactly.
But the contract was pivotal, wasn't it, in making
sure? Yeah, I mean, that look, you have to have a solid contract with any whoever you employ. And to be fair to QS, that was done very well. So you know, we had a payment schedule, and no payment was made until each stage was done to a satisfactory standard. So it meant financially I wasn't in trouble at all. Mm-hmm. And that was critical, that I could move to the other builder not having paid for things that hadn't been done. So who
was signing off on the stages? Is it the QS? An engineer?
The architect has the final.
The architect.
Play.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was good. That was really good. So yeah, you're right. The contract is very, very important.
So I presume you opted out of.
We did.
In terms of filing all the paperwork and stuff for building.
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I think really the only benefit of not opting out is if you're going to sell the house within a reasonably short period of time. Because I think it's good to have that all signed off absolutely perfectly. Again, I don't know much about it, but I have no intention of selling this house. And, you know, it's all built according to building regulations. So I didn't see a benefit in staying into that scheme.
Did you look into the costing it? Or
I think it might have cost, if I hadn't opted out, I think the architect said, with all the onerous sort of paperwork and inspections, it might have, look, I off the top of my head, it might cost an extra 5 to 10 grand, you know.
Yeah
so just with all the extra
money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money for no gain, only yeah, headaches. So
yeah,
and because these buildings, they all have to be built up to current regulations anyway, so the architect can't sign off on that anyway. Now I think it probably would have made it more difficult for the builder to make mistakes, because it would have been more of a presence from the architect on site. But really, anyway, no, we opted out, and I think that was a good idea, good decision.
And in terms of health and safety, do you remember what had to be done there, or did the architect take care of all of that?
Yeah, no, we had a health and safety document drawn up, and they had to tick lots of boxes, and it was kind of fairly onerous. The QS. Safety file drafted. I hardly looked at it.
Yeah. It's an extra cost as well, but sure, it's
has to be done. I think you have to have it, don't you, by law?
Oh, you really do. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So in terms of kind of tips, advice along the way of the builder, the planning process. I know we touched upon a few already, but
okay. So I mean, look, the best. Money I spent on the whole process was a planning consultant, you know, and despite them charging me maybe €1,000 to write a couple of letters, which is quite a lot per letter. I wish I could make that much money with a couple of letters. But do you know what? His experience was invaluable, and really we got the cottage as a result of that advice. So planning consultant was a great thing, and a lot of people wouldn't use them, particularly if you get a good local consultant who knows the planners and how they think. Again, you need to acquire the best contractor you can. That's critical. Don't expect too much from your architect in relation to project management, because I think I'm generalizing, but generally speaking, I don't feel that that is really their department. They might dispute that. What else? What other bits of advice? Look, we sourced a lot of materials. I mean, sourcing materials was obviously a huge part of the project, and we made a big effort there to make sure that we got the materials that we wanted. So we got Spanish slate, we got zinc from Germany, we got wooden floors from Germany. My wife is German, so we imported quite a few things from Germany, and we saved a lot. So Reuter, R-E-U-T-E-R, they're a bathroom suppliers from Germany. They shipped in all our stuff at no extra cost. I think it cost €100 for a pallet, and that got us all our sanitary ware, our showers, baths, everything. So sourcing materials, make an effort on there. You'll get a lot of savings, and you'll probably get better quality if you make an effort and don't just go to your local suppliers. I know I'm not being very loyal to Ireland and our economy here, but to hell with that. In this instance, anyway.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So the finishes, were there any driving forces? Where, how did you get your inspiration and all that finishes. Kind of jazz?
Well, we don't like anything that's sort of artificial or fake, you know, or just pretentious. So we wanted to keep it simple. But like, for example, the floors are proper wooden floors, because we don't like the laminate. You know, even though the quality is high, and by far the most popular selling floors are these high quality laminate floors, we didn't go for those because we want real wood. And it means we can we oil them every 6 months. We're really happy with the wooden floors. But they scratch a bit. So, you know, but we don't mind that. So our style was not to put anything that was in any way just to make it look good. You know, like, didn't want to put any false ceilings in to balance things up. And we didn't spend too much money on our kitchens and our bathrooms. So, and they look really, really well. Like, we didn't go for, say, Newcastle design, which is very popular, but extremely expensive. We did go local for our kitchen and our cabinetry work. And we didn't spend a huge amount of money, and it's perfectly adequate. It's more than adequate. It's good, you know?
So how did you design it? Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
We spent more money on, as you said at the start, insulation. You know, the main fabric of the building is where we invested more money than the finishes, you know? Because they're going to date anyway. You know, give it 5 or 10 years, and even if it's a really modern, fabulous kitchen. Now, it is nice, but don't get me wrong, but even if it was state-of-the-art, in 10 years' time, it would be completely dated anyway, as would be the case with the bathrooms. Because I see it all the time. I'm an estate agent myself, and I see, you know, these things date very well. The other thing we didn't want to do, very quickly, I mean, the other thing we didn't want to do is follow trends, because, again, in the business that I'm in, you know, if you go for trends and popular colors at a particular time, they're the quickest to go out of trend, you know, and suddenly you've time stamped when you built the house. So we went for what we wanted, not what was in fashion.
So the kitchen, then, just going back on that, the bathroom design wise, did you guys design it yourself and then ask a local carpenter to put it
together?
Yeah,
we just designed it ourselves. Yeah. So Alex, my wife, did all the interiors, really, you know, the kitchen, the bathrooms, the utility room, which is fabulous. Really like that room. And yeah, we just got sat down with a bit of paper and discussed it with the carpenter. We went to a few different kitchen suppliers. So, you know, it's a bit bad luck on them because they would have helped us a lot with the design and then not got the job. So we were able to show that to the guy who did get the job. You know, like, they've got lots of, you know, software to be able to show what it's going to look like, you know. So we used that, and the local guy was able to benefit from that work.
Mm-hmm. So then, in terms of the budget, did you have a spreadsheet, or how did you manage to keep on top of things, or was it just really a question of you know, following the schedule with the builder? Then, when you're going, okay, this is, we're going to plan, and
yeah,
that's it. There wasn't too much managing of the budget then, if you had a main contractor, was there?
I mean, managing the budget. So we didn't do a bill of quantities we didn't finalize a bill of quantities prior to starting, and maybe that's the right thing to do, but we did want to get going on the project. So we put quite a lot of PC sums in. So we gave ourselves a budget for the kitchen of, say, I think of a budget of the kitchen and the utility room, I think it was 25 grand, excluding appliances. Mm-hmm. So we had to work to that budget, and the builder had to be happy that he could do, you know, but not the builder, not as a bad example with the kitchen, because we subcontracted that bit. But, you know, yeah, we had a very clear idea of each stage, what our budget was. And sometimes we went over it slightly, and other times we were maybe slightly under. Often more over than under, as you can imagine. But we had it fairly tight. And yeah, we had a spreadsheet with all our costs through the project.
Because you basically sourced a lot of the products, as you were saying, from Germany for fittings and flooring and all that. So I suppose you left a lot of stuff out of the contract for you to source then. So were you under pressure from the builders to, okay, I need that now?
Yeah, no, we weren't. No, we were, luckily, we were a step ahead of the builders all the time. So that's a good point. Like, you know, you can't have a builder blaming you for not having the materials on site. Now, a lot of the materials would have gone through the builder. So I think they took a small cut on everything. Even though we were sourcing it, they took their little cut on it, which was fine by us. It's just part of their remuneration. So they would have actually managed the orders, even through Germany. They would have managed them. They would have opened their account in Germany, for example.
Okay.
Now, with the exception of the guy who put in the kitchen and the utility and the wardrobes and everything, they were separate.
So then when the materials got on site, how were they stored? Because if you got a few pallets from Germany, they had to be put somewhere safe. Did you?
Yeah, so we had the cottage.
Oh, the cottage, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a really, really great unit for storing stuff as it came in. But I mean, it was a big enough house, so there's a lot of floor area that we could store things just in the middle of the house, you know, in a certain room in the house. So storage wasn't an issue, and nothing. One dehumidifier was stolen on site for the duration of our project. So, you know what? That's okay.
That's a bit bizarre.
It was worth 50 euro.
Yeah.
We lost one tap. It was a nice grower tap. Mm. And I don't know where that went. I'd say that was probably picked up as well by someone. But, you know, so security was an issue, was a concern, but it didn't happen. You know, you've got to watch out for that, though. Security.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Make sure everything's under lock and key and all that.
I think so. Yeah, and if you can get a camera up, you know, if you can get a camera up on site during the project, a few cameras, I think that's a really good idea.
Right.
On their toes.
Yeah. So then, in terms of the timeline, we're talking what? So planning, I think 2016, 2017, roughly. Yeah, I think you'd given me dates. Yeah, July 16 to February 17 is what I have down here, which is fairly long for getting planning, but I guess you're in Wicklow and you had
to wrangle
with them. Yeah.
It felt longer.
Mm.
But you know what? The biggest problem wasn't to be honest with you, the biggest problem wasn't Wicklow County Council. The biggest problem was the architect moving as quickly as we would have liked. So, you know, they've got a lot of jobs on And, you know, when a request comes in for further information, example, you've got to go back to your architect who then has to assist you in delivering that information. I mean, they could be on three or four other projects and they might say, well, I'll deal with that in a month's time, which is what happened. So, you know, that was very, very painful, you know, that how slow it took. I mean, we could have done it a lot quicker if the architect had was in a position to move quicker, you know. So we had to redraw the house because it changed from two-story to bungalow, you know. So that took a long time. So the planners just waited for us until we resubmitted the drawings.
And then the build, so August 17 is when you started and then finished February 2019. So, yeah.
How long was that?
From the delays.
A year and a half.
So that was
it would have taken a year.
It should have taken a year,
and it took a year and a half. And it felt that extra 6 months felt a long time. But you know what? It was fine. It was worth it. It was worth it. And I think when people are in the middle of it, they should see that you know what? Don't panic for those extra few months. You know, if you want to get in before Christmas, I mean, it's not that big a deal. I know you need somewhere to live, but I would relax next time around in terms of the time frame and focus more on the quality. So I would advise anyone not to get stressed about the time frame, even though they don't want to tell their builder that, obviously. You know, there's no problem. Take as long as you want. No. Or their architect, but just take it in your stride, you know?
And just to touch upon the acoustics quickly, I know I don't want to keep you too long.
Fine. Yeah, so we didn't feel there was any benefit in putting ceilings in the house, in a bungalow. And that was one of the best decisions we made, in my opinion. Now, we did put ceilings in the bathrooms, but everything else, you've just got vaulted roof spaces. You know, the ceilings are, they follow the roof line. And as a result, the house was quite echoey, particularly in the kitchen, which is a big space. It didn't bother me as much as Alex, my wife. So we talked about loads of different options, putting in sort of wooden paneling, putting in all sorts of different things. And in the end...
You mean on the walls?
On the ceilings.
Oh, on the ceilings. Put wooden paneling on the ceilings.
So panel the ceilings with sort of wood with little gaps in between. That was an expensive job. So... the builder thought we were mad. He thought, you know what, this would be grand. He said, just plaster it, and it'll be fine. You'll have enough fabrics with furniture and everything to get rid of that echo. So when we finished the house, we felt that it was still too echoey. So we didn't agree with that one. So Big Bear Sound, their acoustic specialists, they came out and they basically fitted these panels to the ceiling. They're just sort of rectangular, plasticky, foamy things. They look actually quite cool. Not that we were looking for anything from a visual point of view. It just had to absorb the sound. And we stuck them up on the ceilings in the kitchen and the dining area, and they made a huge difference. It cost about €1,200 to put them up. But they had their lasers they had their laser lines just to have it. So it looked really sharp and they're clean lined, you know. They work really well.
So then, were there any issues with having vaulted ceilings in terms of running services and cables and all that? Did you?
The only thing is the
ventilation. The
ventilation system to run. Yeah, the ventilation system. You're right. You know, we had to run ducts to each room from the main unit, which was above our inner utility, where there is a small ceiling there. So yeah, it made it a bit more of a challenge, but. You know what? It was fine.
It was on the plan. That. So they worked around it, really. As long as you give them the plans in advance.
The vaulted ceilings are, you know, really, I think people should think about not putting in ceilings in bungalows, particularly when you can't go upstairs. Obviously, if you want to put a dormers in or, you know, create enough attic space for your storage, but where you don't need it, I think it's great. It gives you so much more space and light and height, just a sense of space. And the insulation is just as easy, maybe even easier. You know, you've got your spray foam insulation, and then you've got, we did put a warm board underneath the spray foam. And I think it was 50 mils of, 50 mils of Extratherm again, and then your plasterboard. And it's worked really well.
And anything you would change with hindsight, let's say if you were starting now and you knew what happened, apart from the whole
acquiring kind of people,
the advisors, yeah, Yeah, that is kind of the key.
Now, our windows are amazing. Our slates, we've used Monocoat spray on plaster on the outside. Well, it's not plaster, it's Monocoat spray on.
How is it working out?
It's really, really good.
About the northern side, maybe staining or something.
Yeah, it's quite soft material. So, you know, if you reverse the car into the wall, if you reversed your car into your render, if you have render in your house, you
not
dint
to
the
be
car.
Recommended, I suppose.
Pardon?
Yeah, right. You would dint the car, is it?
You'd dint the bumper on your car, wouldn't you? You'd dint the car. Whereas if you reversed into our wall, you'd put a hole in the wall.
Right.
So that's a problem. And now it's quite soft. And it's only one layer. So I spoke to a plasterer, a client of mine. He said he thought I was mad putting in Monocoat. But he would say that. He's a plasterer.
Mm. No.
And he just felt that it is not as durable. And you know what? And maybe it doesn't create as much air tightness, or over time it might stain. So don't know. The jury's still out on that one, whether Monocoat was a good idea. We spray it down with anti-mold underneath sprayed it down a couple of times underneath the windowsills. You can get this water pouring off the side of the windowsills. You get just a start of a green stain. And you can't just watch. A bit of advice. Try not to wash it off with a power washer. If you get your spray, get it in Woody's or some algae remover. That seems to really keep the render looking, you know, clean. So far the Monocoat is good, but, you know, the jury's out on that one. I'm not 100% sure yet.
A little bit of maintenance, yeah.
So that's one thing. Do I have any regrets, though, about design? Not at all. I'm glad the planners made us put a bungalow in rather than two-story. Look, maybe our woodwork, maybe our doors and our architraves and skirting boards, maybe the quality of those is a tiny bit low, maybe, and possibly should have maybe gone for slightly thicker doors. But really, I'm only nitpicking. We're really, really happy with the house so far. Yeah, well, actually, maybe the
2 years
outside our driveway, maybe our driveway is not flat enough. So we should have maybe made a bit more of an effort with the front of the house, the gravel, where we graded the 804 before we put on our gravel. It's not quite flat, but again, we can fix that. Just visually, that it's not totally flat, and maybe we skimmed on that a little bit. It's just not
right. Okay,
it's just
on
you
the
know,
groundworks.
A client of mine, a brilliant client of mine, very kindly. Who lives down the road in Wicklow here, he had an 18-ton Hi-Mac and he gave it to me for my duration of my build. So that saved me a huge amount of money. So I did it all myself and I just employed a driver and it cost me €12 an hour, something amazing, rather than €100 an hour if I was to, I don't know what they are, but maybe €100 an hour if I was to employ someone with a Hi-Mac. So we saved a lot of money, but maybe as a result, if I'd had a professional overseeing the whole thing, it might have been slightly better, but we saved a lot of money. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that makes a difference. But they were safe pass. They had their safe pass and all that, didn't they? Sure, they did.
safe pass, eh?
Or something like that. I can't remember. I think there are kind of.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, they get their yellow pass or.
The driver. The driver had a safe pass. That's right. No, the guy who my client who. Gave me that digger, an amazing thing to have. He asked for that, yes. So the driver I had, who's a local guy who I've used recently again, you know, in recent months, he was brilliant. Yeah, he had a safe pass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about insurance, though. I think I might have. You know, because I was employing him, I never quite got to the bottom of that insurance thing. So that's something to watch out for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did you get self-built insurance or did you just leave it to the builder then?
I think when the builder. They take possession of the site. They therefore are responsible for insurance. So I don't think I had a sufficient level of insurance cover to employ my own people.
Mm-hmm.
So I may have broken that rule with the driver. So it's one to watch out for. Maybe farm insurance might have covered the driver on the farm, you know, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the cost, do you remember overall
how much is the cost of the house?
Yeah.
That's like asking a farmer, you know, how much land they have.
All right, I'll take it back.
I'm only messing. No, I think I told you already. I'm only joking. I think the overall cost all in was about 600 grand.
Mm-hmm.
550 excluding 5'50" excluding professionals.
Yeah. So,
professional, what do you know, the architect and QS and things like that. Engineer, I had to employ an engineer as well. The planning consultant. So 550, 600, mm-hmm. it's about 300 square meters.
Yeah, in Wicklow.
Look, it's not for the faint-hearted. That's all I can say to anyone who wants to build a house. It's not for the faint-hearted, but it's worth it.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it worth it, though?
Oh, definitely worth it. It's really yeah. worth it. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you know, I think most people who build, they will tell you that. Yeah, mm. absolutely. Yeah.
100%. That's great, David. Thanks so much for your time.
Not at all. Thanks, Astrid.
That's it for this Self-Build Plus podcast episode. Tune in next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And make sure to explore everything Self-Build Plus has to offer. The Self-Build Plus journey guides you through the process of building and home improving. The Self-Build Plus forum allows you to share and learn from other self-builders. While the Self-Build Plus videos and our Self-Build Plus virtual events are packed with information and advice. With Self-Build, stop dreaming, start building.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.